Hello and welcome to the fifth edition of Chicago Business Podcast. I am your host, Drew Sekula, and we are taping remotely today, given the COVID-19 crisis. So today I welcome Mr. Patrick Justice with Bridgewater Studios. He is a co-founder and partner with the company, which is doing some amazing things, growing here in Chicago over the last 4.5 years and adjusting their business to support first responders with the current crisis that we have. So it's a great discussion here on the podcast today. I hope you like and enjoy. Please share with a friend if you do, and let's get on with the show. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Chicago Business Podcast. Today, we welcome Patrick Justice with Bridgewater Studios, a partner with the firm and one of the co-founders. So thank you very much for joining us today, Patrick. Very excited to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And looking forward to kind of telling you what we're doing.
Yeah, this is really exciting. When the bit I heard from Ashley and the different things you guys have going on, I mean, first with the just with the business itself in terms of how much it's grown. I understand you guys are about 4.5 years old, now over 50 people after starting it, just the two of you. And that's an exciting story, I think, in and of itself. And then you have, you know, a couple of specific things more recently, of course, what you're doing with the our pandemic crisis here and how mm-hmm. you're supporting the community with COVID-19 and how you've adjusted your business. And then also interested in talking some about the grant that I think you guys had through the city of Chicago. And if you can touch on that as well, that would be great because I know there'd be interest in hearing some about that as well. So with that, maybe if you could spend a couple minutes just telling us a little bit about Bridgewater Studio and what you guys are going there, and then we can get into some of your background after that.
Sure. Like you said, so my partner Eric and I started the company a little over 4.5 years ago. We had been in similar industries working for production shops in Chicago and, you know, working on like museum exhibits and opera scenery and things like that. And we decided that we were tired of working for somebody else and we wanted to work for ourselves and build the last jobs we were ever going to have. We started 4 years ago in Eric's studio space. It was the two of us in like a 3,000 square foot studio space. And in 4.5 years, we've purchased two buildings. We've got a 14,000 square foot space in McKinley Park over at like 35th and Ashland. And then another 45,000 square foot space at 48th and Western. So we're at, 60,000 square feet, over 53 employees right now, full time. We've seen 100% growth every year for the last 4 years, which is mind boggling. I mean, we're aging like presidents. It's been a challenge. It's been really rewarding. It's been a ton of fun. It's like, hey, I don't want to work 80 hours a week for somebody else. So let's go work 100 hours a week for ourselves. It's been really incredible. We've built an amazing team, and we would not be where we are without the people that we have. We've just been really successful. I mean, most of our business comes from word of mouth. Like it's so much easier to keep a client than it is to go out and get new ones. And, you know, our industry runs in such tight circles. You know, I mean, we're only as good as the last thing that goes out the door. Nobody really cares about what we did 3 years ago. They want to know about what we're doing right now. And, you know, we like to under promise and over deliver. And, it's the metrics that Eric always refers to is, if you do good work at a reasonable price and you're easy to get along with, that's kind of the key to success. And it's rare that you find places that do all three of those consistently.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Can you give us a feel for like some of the clients that you have and who is it that you work with mostly?
A lot of our clients are more like kind of design agencies and, you know, things like that. We do a ton of work with Nike, doing like kind of branded retail environments for them. We, you know, like when the NBA All-Star game was in town, we were working at the Nike store, the Jordan store, the Foot Locker store, like kind of re-theming all of these interiors for different events. Museum clients, we do a lot of work with the Museum of Science and Industry, the Field Museum here in Chicago. We build a lot of kind of experiential environments for shopping mall clients. So like the Beverly Center Mall in Beverly Hills, California, we did their big holiday, you know, kind of center court environment. You know, so we're doing, it's kind of all over the place. We never, you know, I jokingly say we've only done the same thing twice once. Because every time, you know, people come to us, you know, we do a lot of work with graduate hotels. They're a boutique hotel client in like major college sports market areas. And they kind of theme the hotels, you know, as like a throwback to the college or university that they're kind of tied in with. You know, and people come to us when they don't know who the heck they're going to get to do the stuff that, you know, the wacky stuff that they come up with. They call us and they say, hey, can you guys do this? And we say, yeah, sure, when you need it. You know, I mean, we the only time we'll ever say no to a job is if we don't have the bandwidth for it.
Yeah, that's great. That's got to be fun to always be working on something new and different and, you know, working with the creative types to really engage customers. I'm sure that's, you know, you probably, obviously you're providing a lot of value to your customers there. So, tell me, obviously with that kind of growth, you know, you're getting, some good, word mouth and I don't know. I was, taking a look at your website and, kudos to you guys for highlighting, so many of your employees. It seems like, I don't know, you said you have 50 some employees. I think they might all be on the website because
they are.
Are they? Yeah, that's great to see.
Well, and I mean, you know, it's just one of those things. Like we all, our employees come from all kinds of different backgrounds. I mean, we've got people that were, you know, they used to build motorcycles, or one of our guys is he was a luthier and made guitars for a living. And, you know, we've got people that worked in kind of like the, you know, industrial design sector. We've got people with theater backgrounds. We've got people with artistic, like fine art backgrounds. And everybody at Bridgewater kind of cross pollinates between departments. You know, nobody here wears, the only person here that wears one hat is our bookkeeper. You know, and she keeps us in the black. So that's an important hat to wear. But, you know, I mean, at some point, you know, even as a business owner, like the toilet's got to get clean, you know, and that's something that you just have to get in there and do it. And, you know, sometimes the people in the metal shop will be working with the carpenters will be sanding stuff, getting ready for paint, the painters will be helping out the carpenters. I mean, it's all very much, you know, we kind of want our team members to operate this as if they had their own small business with inside of our small business and take that kind of ownership, you know, and we give people the opportunity to, you know, grow and experience things, but also to kind of fail in a controlled environment, you know, to allow them to do as much learning and figuring things out. You know, we use a lot of the same techniques and disciplines and things, but we just have to apply them to whatever job that we're working on at that time.
Nice. So I would expect that most of the projects that you guys have been working on, though, have, you know, the traditional business, obviously the whole world got turned upside down a month ago, or, you know, give or take. Yep. So you guys have been doing some amazing things in terms of transforming your production facilities there into producing face masks or face meal, excuse me, the
face shields.
But I understand that you produced almost 100,000 so far. So maybe if you could talk a little bit about that. Another thing I noticed on your website is that while everybody is so uncertain in this environment, and many shops, I would think, similar to yours or businesses, not there might not be too many shops like yours, but businesses like yours are having to lay people off. And I saw you guys are hiring. So you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, I mean, given what we do, like our, you know, our business model is very much kind of flexible fabrication, you know, so since everything that comes into the shop is completely different, we've also, you know, when we started the company, we wanted to be able to do as much in-house as possible, you know, so we wouldn't have to go to outside vendors. And, you know, everything happened up until just recently. Everything was happening so quickly. You know, we were calling it like the Amazon Prime-ification of the world. You know, stuff that we used to get 6 weeks on, we get 2 weeks. So we brought as many facilities in-house, or we increased our in-house capabilities so we could do all this work on our own. So we have, you know, lasers and CNC machines and KUKA robot cells and 3D printers and a whole graphics department, because I can't wait a week for somebody to mess something up and then deliver a wrong product. So being able to take all of that equipment and all of our expertise and just pivot it on a moment's notice to start working on the face shield production. You know, we got a call from a contemporary of ours in New York that we do a lot of work with. And they said, hey, look, we've stopped doing what we're doing and we're starting to make face shields for first responders. Can you guys jump in on this? Start making this. Here's the spec. Start making these things and start shipping them to New York. So in, you know, we came in on a Saturday, we prototyped a face shield, we started securing supply chain, and by Monday we were up and running making face shields. You know, so we were able to, you know, since we had the equipment here to be able to do that, you know, I mean, it's plastic and you have to either cut it with a CNC router or cut it with a laser. And we've got two lasers to cut plastic with and two routers to cut plastic with. So we just started running, you know, two shifts a day at both of our locations. And, you know, we were jamming on these things until the supply chain dried up, you know, I mean, getting plastic, now everybody needs it. You know, mm-hmm. So once we were able to kind of secure a supply chain for raw materials, yeah, we started hiring people. We hired an additional 25 people. I mean, we had some of our team was staying home and self-isolating and things like that. So yeah, we brought in, you know, friends and family members of people that worked, that were already working with us to help kind of continue this rapid ramp up of production.
That's great. So, and supply chain though is an issue. So there's probably, it's just, everybody's kind of scrambling. It's funny. I was just at Costco yesterday. It seems like they put up, I don't know if it's the same type of material, but you know, it's not just at the register now, it's all the way back down the line. And,
right.
I would think that similar type of material of what you're using for the face shields as well.
Yeah, I mean, like it's crazy. We've been calling plastic suppliers, plastic manufacturers. I mean, we've talked directly to the plant that is producing the sheets of plastic, and you know, sending it to all these other suppliers. And there's with the sneeze guards and grocery stores, and you know, we use a thin gauge PETG plastic, and it was ridiculous. I mean, it was just, nobody had any. Everybody's saying, you know, it'll be 2-3 weeks, it'll be a month, it'll be the end of July before you can get material. And we were able to secure some after some very diligent digging by one of our guys that's leading up the production here. And you know, we've been able to kind of secure our own supply chain so we can keep this stuff moving and get it into the hands of people that really need it.
Yeah, that's great. Are the vendors doing anything to prioritize kind of the you know, the urgent, I guess most of the plastic that's out there is probably being used for you know, for the effort, but I guess there's some people out there who are probably trying to take advantage of it as well versus people who are trying to get it to the first responders. Is there any kind of prioritization that the vendors are doing? One thing that I had seen, just real an anecdotal reference point, was I used to be in the healthcare industry for a number of years, and a contact of mine reached out who, you know, works for a very large healthcare business, but not a hospital or necessarily, it's a little bit ancillary, and he was scrambling to try to pull together masks for, you know, he needed whatever 10,000 masks, and their existing suppliers even. What I had heard, because I dug into it a little bit, and it seems like, you know, there was a lot of prioritization of existing customers first, and anything beyond that, you know, at least from the facial mass got very, very tight. I don't know where it is now, but that was only, 10 days ago or so. And it was very, very tough. So.
Yeah, it's still very tight. I mean, we were, when we first kind of were starting to get wind of this and seeing, we looked into, we're like, all right, well, we should kind of bulk up our supply, because we didn't realize that we were going to completely shut down and switch what we're doing to what we're doing now. So I went online to a couple of our suppliers, and I was like, I guess dust masks are going to be kind of a hot ticket item. So let's see if we can order a couple, just to, a couple cases to keep us through, because we work in an environment where we generate a lot of dust. It's like, we're not hoarding them. We need them for our own, our team members, it's part of their PPE for the work that they're doing. And you couldn't get anything. And this was 3-4 weeks ago. And it's still, like, I go on to, if I try to find latex gloves online, it's a 7 to 8 week lead time from like major suppliers. The priority right now is, if you're not a doctor, a nurse, or work in healthcare, you can't get them. And that seems to be the trend. And I'm sure that'll ramp back up. I heard somebody saying the other day that part of the supply chain hiccup was that, like, the areas in China that were most affected by coronavirus were the areas that produced the bulk of the PPE that the coronavirus requires. So it was that perfect storm. Like, there was a town in Italy that made most of the swabs for this type of testing, and they lost their ability to make those things. So, like, there are different chunks of the supply chain. It was this perfect storm of supply chain issues that all kind of happened together, and it started trickling down to everybody. As far as companies prioritizing stuff, I mean, in Illinois, they're saying that, Pritzker is saying it's the wild, wild west out there. I mean, you got to call everybody you can and see what you can get, And I mean, we just recently bought an entire container load of plastic to be able to do this stuff. So it's, 3 weeks out on that, and you're kind of speculating. I mean, there might be larger manufacturers that are going to get their stuff up and running, but we were able to start producing stuff in 24 hours. And it takes a little while for, like, a hockey face shield company to start retooling their entire line. So we're able to kind of fill in those gaps because we're a little bit more nimble and a little bit more flexible than like the GMs of the world.
So how are you making those decisions now, in terms of, nobody knows how long this is all going to last and what it's going to look like on the other side. So, in your planning and your decision to pull the trigger on that container load, what was the thought process like for that?
I mean, we've basically, we're just trying to keep our heads above water. I mean, we're not out of this. According to most medical reports and the scientists and everything, like, it's once we get to that point where we start to, kind of flatten that curve, it's not about getting to the peak and then everything comes back to normal. It's about getting to the peak and then letting it all, we're still, 12 months away from a vaccine. So, if we can keep doing this in an effort to support the slow of this, of the virus, we're going to keep doing it. I mean, there's no question in our mind that we wouldn't do this to be the most effective that we can. I mean, we're building these things at cost. Like, we're not buying houses with we're not profiteering off of a pandemic. We're doing this at cost so we can keep the lights on and pay our 53 employees health insurance that we cover 100% of. So that's basically, wow. that's our main reason for doing it, is to make sure that our team is taken care of in a time where they need the most care taken of. And then if we can be a help to the community. I mean, we were saying the other day, it's like, we're not building bombers, but somebody's got to make the rivets, right? And that's kind of what we're doing.
That's great. We obviously, our country and our world needs people stepping up just like you guys have. So, have you thought about doing anything other than the face mask, or that's your sweet spot in terms of how you can assist?
Yeah, I mean, right now that's the sweet spot. Most of the other products that people are looking for, like, we've been we took a prototype AmbuBag like robotic arm compressor that they use, the you know, the bags that they put you on when you need CPR and things like that. So we took a concept that was developed at MIT, and we've been rapid prototyping that here in the shop. And we actually have a working model right now where you can put an AmbuBag in this thing and it squeezes it at the right pulses and does all the stuff that it's supposed to. But when you get into more like medical device manufacturing, like now you're looking at FDA approval and, you know, all this other stuff. So it was kind of an exercise, and it's kind of like a, hey, let's keep this in our back pocket in case things get really, really bad. I mean, our hope is that we're not building face shields for the next 6 months. You know, like we would love to just go back and start carving foam with the robots. You know, but we, you know, it is what it is right now, and we've got to do what we have to do. But yeah, so we've been kind of, you know, trying to think about what else we can do and where else we can, you know, fill any gaps that might come up. I mean, you know, we're not going to start making ventilators. I can't compete with Tesla and Chrysler for that. But, you know, it's you know, wherever we can be helpful is, that's, you know, that's our main goal. And we, you know, we also enjoy the, I hate to say the exercise of it, but like it's good. It's, you know, it's keeping our guys busy. It's keeping people thinking about stuff. You know, we're still, mm-hmm. you know, I've got guys working on, you know, drawing stuff in CAD and then coming in here and cutting parts out on the laser. And, you know, our robotic specialist is like, you know, building his own circuit boards for this stuff so we can actually power these things. And, you know, it's good to keep your skills sharp even when you're not working and we don't have those other things to do.
Yeah. And people don't want to sit, working remotely is okay, but there's not too many people in your workforce, I don't think, that can do a whole lot from home, right? So it's great and working. Yeah.
Yeah. Like my guys, I know a couple of my guys that would love to bring a welder home and work from home, but you know, they just can't do that.
Maybe if you could say a few words about what you're doing there in the shop to keep people safe as well, and how you're, you know, dealing with social distancing and in the wake of the business that you're continuing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've actually got, we split production up between our two facilities, and we're running two shifts at both facilities. So all of our stations, our workstations are at least 6 feet apart. You know, we do a contactless forehead temperature scan of everybody when they come into the building. You know, if you're 99, you're going home for 2 weeks. Everybody here, you know, I will stand at the door and tell people to wash their hands when they come into the building. People are wearing gloves. Most of our staff already owned and was using like the big 3M respirators for, you know, painting and fumes and things like that. So everybody here is wearing PPE while they're working. You know, and sometimes you just have to walk around and say, get off your phone, change your gloves, go wash your hands, get back to work. You know, I don't like being a hall monitor, but that's one of the things that we have to do. And, you know, we're making sure that everybody on our team is checking in. I mean, for the last month and a half, I've been taking my temperature twice a day, and that's, you know, if I have a fever, I'm not coming to work. And that's the only thing that we can do. You know, the only thing that's really effective is washing your hands and staying and maintaining that social distancing and, you know, like wiping down high contact surfaces and things like that.
Right. That's good that it wasn't too much of a transition given the work that you guys are doing, and you have a lot of that equipment already in stock to kind of keep people safe. So, but mm-hmm. yeah, there's so many extra precautions that you need to take just to make sure, right? But hopefully,
right. I mean, we've also asked all of our employees that are part of this production, you know, if you're on, we don't want, you know, we want everybody to be able to come into work, but if you're taking the bus or the train, we'd prefer that you either ride with somebody that's working here or stay home, for your own safety and the safety of those around you. Like we have a couple of people that are like, look, I take two buses and a train to get to work. And it's like, well, you should stay home. Like, there's no reason for you to risk your own personal safety to come into work right now. And, potentially expose other people or yourselves, or, you know, shut down what we're doing. So it's kind of in, and everybody's really taken it in stride. They understand the ramifications of this, and, you know, they want to do the right thing. So, you know, that's also another benefit of hiring really smart people.
Right. Yeah. Find a way to make it work, and where possible. And if not, then, you know, then figure something else out. Have you guys, so with continuing to work, or I guess you do have some people that are not coming in. Have you looked into like the PPP loans and some of the assistance that is out there and available to small businesses?
We've applied for the PPP loan and the disaster loans, you know, to kind of just, you know, to stay afloat. I mean, if it's out there and you know, we can utilize it to pay our employees that aren't able to come into work, and, you know, our revenue is not what it used to be. I mean, yes, we're keeping the lights on and we're paying the mortgage, but, you know, there's still, everybody's been hit hard by this. I mean, all of our work was in advertising, retail, museum exhibits, experiential marketing. And, you know, nobody's going to museums. Nobody's going to the Nike store. Nobody's doing that sort of stuff anymore. So all of the work coming in has been, it's been a full stop, you know? So yeah, I mean, it's anything that we can do to take advantage, not take advantage, but utilize those programs. We've been working with our bank and our financial advisor, and, you know, the disaster loan website was a disaster to navigate, but you know, it took a little bit. We were actually watching it like slowly crash while we were filling out our application. Yeah, it was rough. Yeah. You know, it was,
what about what was your, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh no, sorry.
I was just going to ask about your experience with the PPP loan. I know that disaster loan is directly with the government, but the PPP loans are generally going through the banks. And there's all sorts of stories out there of, you know, Wells Fargo, maybe the biggest one, where within the first day, you know, they shut off. They said they hit their cap, and they didn't take any more. I don't know if that's been changed, you know, several days later, but you know, that was my business bank, and really put me in, you know, in some challenging position as well. So, did you have any trouble with? Was it your existing bank that was able to help you, or what was that like?
No, we've had a great relationship with Fifth Third Bank here, and, you know, they've been incredible the entire, like, just from day one through day today. They've been super helpful, just helping us make the right decisions, and, you know, giving us advice and everything. So they've been working with us really, really closely on this. So far, that application process and seeing where we're going with funding and things like that, it hasn't been too painful. You know, so we're still kind of waiting to see what exactly will happen with this. And then, you know, the guidelines on this, whether it's the tax guidelines or what you're using for payroll and things like that, like those are changing daily. You know, so what's going to be a real key factor in this? It's not going to be about how much money we get or what we do with it. It's going to be how we track it and how we protect ourselves in the future for receiving any of this funding. You know, so we need to, we're all learning a whole new set of skills at the moment, trying to navigate this. And, you know, I mean, we're trying to get good advice from the right people, and you know, make sure we're crossing all of our T's and dotting all of our I's. And, you know, the last thing we want to do is get in a whole bunch of legal or financial trouble because, you know, of a financial bailout. So we want to make sure that all of our ducks are in the row, and we're taking the right steps and following whatever recommended procedure is out there.
Right. Well, it sure seems like, I guess you guys are leveraging your experience and having grown so quick to really innovate. That's that's a big focus for what or area that I like to talk about and talk about real-time innovation. You guys have been on your tippy toes here for for a while now, right?
We got a lot of plates in the air right now. It is weird going from a business model where everything we make is custom to now we're manufacturing one product. You know, a couple of the guys I was talking to on the floor the other day, they're like, you know, it's almost kind of boring. Like, nobody here is used to just assembling stuff. You know, like, we are not an assembly line. We don't make widgets. You know, and now we're making widgets for a good cause. So, you know, that helps keep the spirits up. But it's been interesting. Now it's been interesting to go from, you know, running a custom fabrication studio to running a factory.
Right. Yeah. Well, hopefully not for too long, but we just don't know at this point. So, but I think that's a good transition, maybe, so we can go back and talk more about, you know, your core business there and about innovation, because, you know, you mentioned robots before. I'm interested in hearing, you know, how your business has changed and what kind of investments in innovation, you know, you guys are seeing in your traditional business as well.
Sure. I mean, what we've done, we've taken most of the profit that we've made and invested it back into either the building or the equipment or our team. You know, we rely heavily on digital manufacturing, whether it's, you know, like I said, we've taken like the 7-axis KUKA robots that they use in auto manufacturing, and we use those now to carve giant foam sculptures for, you know, different clients and things like that. You know, so we rely heavily on that digital workflow. So, you know, all of our stuff is drawn in CAD in-house. You know, I can start a drawing at 7 o'clock in the morning. I can draw it, go down to the laser, cut the part out, bring it over to the CNC press break, form a sheet metal pan, weld it together, powder coat it, and I've got a finished piece by lunch. And it used to take somebody else 2 weeks to screw that up. So, you know, we can rapidly iterate things in-house, and, you know, we can try something before, you know, before we sink a lot of money into outsourcing it and subcontracting it and getting third-party vendors to do all this stuff. It's completely changed how we approach things. You know, I mean, we've actually taken jobs because we wanted to buy a piece of equipment. You know, we're like, oh, if we do this, we can get one of these. And, you know, we've always wanted one of these. You know, so we're always looking for that next cool job where we can be like, oh, what's this one special thing that nobody else has that we can do? And then, you know, once somebody knows that we can do these things, then that word just, it travels around, and, you know, people tell other people, and that's that kind of word of mouth marketing that we've been really fortunate with. I mean, you know, when somebody's like, oh, you guys do this, and you do this, and you have these things? We're like, yes, we do, and we do, and we do. So, yeah, like, this is, you know, come to us with an idea, and we'll tell you that we can build it, and we'll figure out a way to make your thing come to life. And, you know, so that's been a real key takeaway on ours. And, you know, I mean, everything from in-house, like, computer programming and Arduino work to 3D printing, you know, I mean, we're always trying to do something new and, you know, kind of stay on that cutting edge, because that's a real fun place to be. You know, we like a challenge. I like hiring people that are smarter than me and letting them kind of learn new stuff. And then, you know, that makes it so much cooler for us to be able to market something that we couldn't do last week.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned 3D printing there, and I think maybe made some reference to it earlier as well. Is that, you know, that always seemed kind of like a novel concept up until recently. Are you guys effectively using that in your business on a regular basis?
Absolutely. I mean, we do a lot of, like, again, like, so like with these sculptures and things like that, since it's all part of this digital workflow, we'll actually 3D print, you know, little smaller versions of the sculpture and then send it over to the paint department, and they'll paint it, and we can give that to the client. And it is literally what you see is what you get. Like, this is your 3D model. This is an actual version of it. now you've got, you know, a 6-inch tall version of the 12-foot tall giant husky sculpture that we're making for a hotel by the University of Connecticut. So, you know, the client can see it. And then, you know, a lot of times we'll, you know, I can 3D print a part to test it in a component before I go and cut it out of metal or, you know, have a bunch of pieces made. We do a lot of like acrylic casting. We'll do like resin pours for multiple objects, and, you know, we can 3D print something and then pull a silicone mold off of that and then use that to make multiples of things. So, I mean, we rely pretty heavily on the 3D printers in, you know, we've got a couple different types of 3D printers, and, you know, we use them for, you know, making little functional parts or testing something. I mean, it's just so much quicker to be able to, you know, and I can run the printer's lights out. You know, we can set something to print for 12 hours, go home, come back in the morning, and it's ready to go. The technology has gone from kind of that, you know, you either needed a $500,000 3D printer or like some G-Wiz home desktop stuff to it's very viable product now that you can make working components with the 3D printer, and, you know, it just does whatever you tell it to. It's really kind of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sounds like there's also, well, yeah, with the creative shop that you guys have and everything that's changing, there's some big investments to make though, especially when you're buying property. Sounds like you have gotten a little support with from the city of Chicago. Can you talk a little bit about that? I think what's related to development zone where you guys are located. Is that right?
We received a very sizable grant from the city of Chicago through their Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, where they take it's not. Some people compare it to like the TIF districts in Chicago, but it's not the same thing. So this is more for the South and Southwest side, to kind of bring businesses and jobs back into struggling neighborhoods. So when we were going to purchase this building over at 48th and Oakley, you know, we developed a great relationship with our alderman, Alderman Ray Lopez in the 15th ward, you know, and the goal was to buy a building that was basically run down. It was probably, you know, it'd been 20 years worth of deferred maintenance in this building. So, you know, it was probably 2 or 3 years away from just being leveled. You know, so our goal was to buy that building, get business back into that neighborhood and hire people from the community while, you know, kind of sprucing up the look of it and part of that. So there's a community engagement function there. You know, our plan is to take a significant chunk of the front office area of the building and turn it into a small business incubator, to kind of provide people that are doing what we were doing 4 years ago, a brick and mortar space to be able to develop their business, you know, so they can use our resource pool to start doing what we were doing. You know, like if 4 years ago somebody had come to me and said, hey, look, like I've got connections with bankers, lawyers, real estate developers, you know, I've got clients, I've got, you know, here's who we use for insurance. If that guidance was out there for us 4 years ago, it would have been awesome. You know, I mean, we had to learn a lot on the fly, but, you know, now people could come and say like, hey, look, I've got this product that I need, and I only need a 300 square foot space to make it in, but also I need insurance. You know, I need to be able to have, you know, life insurance or property insurance, or, you know, I need to, that sort of thing. So, you know, it would be beneficial for us to also just work with more creative people in the neighborhoods, and it would be beneficial for them to, you know, bounce ideas off of us and use us as part of their resource base, you know, for people they need to talk to do what they need to do. I mean, it's just there's so much information out there that we've never been like tight-lipped about resources and things like that. Like we want other people to succeed too, you know, and that's not, and being stingy with information isn't how other people succeed. So we've always been as generous with other people as people have been with us. So that's kind of what we want to do with that, with the Neighborhood Opportunity Fund, was to get that building up and running. I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure work, like it needed a new roof, you know, so that the funds help with that, and they help with hiring new people and, you know, just kind of growing that business in a neighborhood that needs businesses.
Right. Yeah, that's great. What was that like in terms of navigating the political waters and kind of that's no easy task to I guess you guys were a few years in, right? This happened, was it last summer?
Yeah, this is last summer.
Yeah. So what was that like in terms of trying to navigate the Chicago political environment?
It was not as messy as I thought it would be. I mean, there are very specific hoops that you have to jump through. I mean, we had to come up with a very specific proposal for what we were going to use the funds for, what our plan was for building development, what our plan was for neighborhood development. We had to get the blessing of the alderman. We had to get the blessing of city council. We had to get the blessing of Department of Planning and Zoning. And, you know, we had to do environmental remediation in on the on site, things like that. You know, so it's a process. I mean, it took over a year for that application to be approved and that money to be granted. But it was, you know, it moved a little bit quicker than I thought it would. And it was definitely a learning experience, but you know, I mean, I've had other dealings with the city of Chicago, and they're some parts of it are not pleasant to navigate. And this one, in the end, was not as painful as I had imagined. But it was definitely, nice. You know, it took quite a bit to put it all together, and you know, make sure that we were doing all the right steps. You know, it was, and there was a little bit of an investment there to be able to present this to get that grant money from the city.
Yeah, I'm sure. Did you have to engage like an outside consultant to navigate through the process, or is that something you did internally?
No, we did. We had a lot of help with. We had a lot of like having an alderman on your side is a huge help. You know, as soon as the alderman likes your project, they're in. You know, so that definitely helps. You know, we've employed a lobbyist for the city council in the past to get some stuff done with our SBA loan. You know, so it was more making sure that we had a great relationship with our personal banker. You know, being really good friends with the alderman, and you know, coming up with an idea that fit the neighborhood's needs, as well as something that fit our needs, you know. And it was mostly, you know, not so much outside counsel. It was just, you know, making sure that we had the right people. I mean, having a great relationship with your banker, having a great relationship with the community, those go a long way.
Yeah. No, that's great to hear. And the, you know, and your openness also in talking and helping others. You know, it's clear that you guys definitely take an attitude of kind of abundance, and that there's plenty of opportunity out there. And it's great to see, you know, these win-win-wins put together for the city and your business and the employees and of course the neighborhood. So kudos to you guys. So I guess we got a couple more things. I do this. The beverage of the day.
Strong black coffee.
Yeah. What's your sometimes the sleep is tough these nights with everything that's going on. So
right.
I've had my fill of coffee so far this morning as well. But what's your preference for coffee?
I am a Dunkin' Donuts.
Do you have a favorite brand?
Yeah,
Dunkin' Donuts guy.
Yeah, and now, you know, since all this is going on, I'm a K-cup at home kind of guy. You know, and I also have a beautiful 15-month-old boy at the house who's brand new, and he definitely makes me have probably even a little bit more coffee than one person should. But
I know that feeling. We're a little bit ahead of you, I guess. Today is actually my son's 11th birthday. So
oh wow.
So I have a a daughter who's 8 as well, coming up on 9. So, but they definitely keep you on your toes. You know, the questions are changing. So it's always fun. But it's always a journey there. So, all right. Well, what's next for you guys then? What does the future look like once we get out from under this, you know, I guess the world it's not going to look the same, but what are the plans for you guys?
Well, I mean, what the new normal is going to be, I'm not sure. Ideally we would love to get right back into what we were doing. You know, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, there's a lot of change is going to happen to a lot of industry. And since we kind of manufacture experiences for those different industries, it's going to be interesting to see how our new role fits into that. You know, I mean, definitely when the economy does start to pick back up and people start to get back to normal, retail is going to want to pick up, advertisers are going to want to pick back up. People are wanting, you know, that sector, you know, theoretically, should bounce back. It's going to be interesting to see how long it takes and in what direction it bounces. We're going to take it moment by moment and see where it goes. I mean, it's our flexibility kind of gives us the option to respond to something really quickly. So, you know, we want to be able to maintain our ability to kind of pivot at a moment's notice. We're kind of, as creative problem solvers, we're excited to see what new Bridgewater is going to look like. I mean, you know, it's only been every year. It's been a completely different year for us. So it's going to be a challenge. And, you know, I know that our team is up to it. Everybody here is eager to get back to doing what they're best at. Not that they're bad at doing what they're doing now, but, you know, everybody wants to do, you know, what they're truly passionate about. And, it'll be interesting to see what we need to do to kind of reinvent ourselves in the new economy that we're about to encounter.
Yep. Yep. Well, congratulations on your success to date. And
thank you very much.
And also with how you've responded to the crisis that we're facing, it really is great to see, companies here in Chicago that we can be proud of that are taking the right actions to help us all get through it. So best of luck to you guys going forward. And it was great chatting with you.
Thank you very much, Drew. It was great chatting with you too. Stay safe and be well out there.
Yeah, you too. Take care.